This is the FCB Radio Network, home of the best personalities and where real talk lives. Online at FCBRadio.com. FCB.
I pray the Lord my soul today that we won't stay, then we won't stay. All we got is us, no one can take that away. So don't stay, it's gonna be okay. I pray the Lord my soul today that we won't stay, then we won't stay. All we got is us, no one can take that away. So don't stay, it's gonna be okay.
Well, hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Just Listen to Yourself. Thank you for just listening to me. I am so pleased to announce, before we get started today, that Just Listen to Yourself and our network, FCB Radio Network, has won our first Communicator Award. We won the award. We won an award for episode 149. That is the episode I did with Rachel Ferguson, known on Twitter as Liberty Ethics. And we talked about reparations. And you guys will get a kick out of this, that the specific, there's a whole list of categories that people could win for. And the category I won in is, let me look this up, but I need to make sure I read it properly. Individual episodes for diversity, equity, and inclusion. I feel so open-minded. I just feel so tolerant. I think I'm gonna go get one of those hate has no home here signs and put that in my front yard, you guys. But fine by me. I'm happy to be here as a conservative. So I haven't bothered to look at the other podcasts on the list, but I'd be willing to bet I'm probably the only conservative podcast on this list. We're honored. So thank you to the Communicator Awards for choosing that. And it was an interesting discussion. I mean, it's worthy of an award. Rachel had some great ideas. I learned a lot. This is my favorite thing about doing interviews on this show. I learn something from everyone that I talk to. And it really helps shape my ideas. And that's why those are my favorite kind of shows. Like, I love to listen to Rogan. I can't listen to 3 hours of Rogan because there's a lot of like UFO talk in there and stuff. I actually do love, you guys know, and I've got to do another episode with neighbor Jason, but you guys know I love theories and conspiracy theories, and I'm into UFO talk, but not enough to listen to like hours and hours. So he's usually drifting off into there. But Adam Carolla is another long form podcaster that I really love. Same thing. You have people on there that teach you things. I love listening to Jordan Peterson's podcast. Again, he has people on there who teach you things, and I'm just a lifelong learner. So it's an honor to win an award for an episode that I really enjoyed doing. And it is a genuinely good episode. I'm making jokes about, you know, the diversity, equity, and inclusion stuff, because we know how I feel about all of that stuff and what it's aimed at. But I'm still honored that someone would think that the podcast is worthy of sharing. It is. It was a good discussion. And I do want to address the reparations thing more fully in the future. But again, I think I've said this before. I want to make sure that I feel confident in the information I'm giving and in my opinions. And I want to make sure that I have really, because it's a really important subject. Some of these subjects come up and I'm just like, hey, I know what I think. You know, here you go. Abortion is wrong. Here's the whole episode on it. Here's 3 episodes on why I think abortion is wrong. But with reparations, I think it's a little more sensitive. And given that I have a large audience of people who are always curious about race issues, I want to make sure I do it the best justice, so that when you come away from that episode, you feel clearer in your mind about what you think. And maybe you don't reach an answer, but you feel more clear. Okay, I'm just beating that dead horse. So let's move on. I wanted to talk about Roe v. Wade today. I actually had an interview set up with my friend Kristen Hawkins, who works for Students for Life. She's an amazing pro-life activist. I've been on her podcast in the past. And I love Kristen, but I had to cancel on her this week. It's been a busy week. So she's going to come on in a couple of weeks and we'll rehash all of this again, only more intelligently, because she's way smarter than I am. But the news cycle is moving along and I don't want to miss this. I know a lot of you are really wondering what I have to say about this issue, about this Roe v. Wade thing. And there's so many aspects to it, right? Like, A, there's the leak. There's a discussion around the leak of the Supreme Court and the morality around that. There are the ensuing protests. Protesters are showing up at justices' houses, and that's getting out of hand. There's the elections coming up. We've got a June primary election and then, of course, a November general election. So elections are coming up. And how does this affect that? So there is this whole, I have three episodes on abortion. They're early episodes. So I'm sure I've become a lot more eloquent in discussing my opinions on abortion since then. But they were specifically about abortion. And I attacked the arguments for abortions piece by piece. So I felt in order to give it its full appreciation, I felt it necessary to kind of divide that up into three episodes rather than take a two-hour, three-hour episode. You can go back and listen to those. But this episode isn't necessarily all about abortion, but obviously it's about abortion. It definitely deserves its own episode. So let's talk about the Roe v. Wade freakout. And I hardly know where to start because there is so much going on. Again, I wish I had Kristen with me this week. She will be here in a couple of weeks. She can focus me. So first of all, not everybody in this audience is pro-life. I know this. That doesn't mean that you're a progressive or a liberal if you're pro-choice. I know plenty of conservatives who are pro-choice. And so I just want to make sure that we all know that those views don't necessarily follow. I get a lot of questions about being conservative and being a Christian and being pro-choice. And a lot of people will say, I don't know how you can be a Christian and a conservative and be pro-choice. And even I catch myself saying that sometimes. But I have to, it's like God taps me on the shoulder and is like, hey, remember that beam in your eye? Because I used to be Christian, fairly conservative, and pro-choice. So you can be a Christian and be wrong. So there's nothing to say that, I mean, of course, there are things that confuse me about it once I really started thinking about abortion and what it means, what life means, what creation means, what God's plan means. Of course, once I really started thinking about abortion in those terms, then I'm like, well, I don't think I can be a Christian and support a woman's right to kill a baby in the womb. I don't think I can do that. But I was a Christian and I did believe that. So I don't have any judgment for you. You can be a Christian and be wrong. Christians are plenty wrong about plenty of things all the time. So I don't think they're mutually exclusive. Just wanted to address that. But let's start off by talking about, well, let me just say this first, like, who am I addressing here today? Who am I talking to here today? Because sometimes I like to talk to, you know, I'll say, oh, this is for you progressives, or this is for you black people, or this is for you white conservatives. Or sometimes I'm speaking to a specific audience. And I think today I want to address the people who are freaked out over the potential dissolution of Roe v. Wade in the Constitution. I want to talk to you. I want to give you reasons why you shouldn't be freaked out by it. And I want to counter some of the more hysterical arguments that some of you are making. And hopefully you'll stick with me through this. So I thought the best place to start would be to actually define what Roe v. Wade is. We talk about it a lot, but because it is a talking point, a lot of people don't. I mean, I think most people don't know what Roe v. Wade is. They think it's just an abortion law. And so they don't know where it came from or who started it or who the plaintiffs were or why it came. So I just wanted to give a quick explainer what Roe v. Wade is. Roe v. Wade is a 1973 Supreme Court decision that supports a woman's right to abortion under the 9th and 14th Amendments. Roe v. Wade was named for Jane Roe, a pseudonym of a Texas resident named Norma McCorvey, and Henry Wade, then district attorney for Dallas County, Texas. In 1969, McCorvey was denied access to abortion because her pregnancy didn't pose a medical risk to her life. At the time, Texas made abortion a crime unless a patient would die without it. This was not uncommon at that time. Abortion was legal in some states, but McCorvey was living in poverty. She was addicted to drugs, I think, at that time. And so she was arguing that it was an undue hardship on her to seek an abortion because of her financial situation. So Norma McCorvey, otherwise known as Roe, won this, and it set a precedent. Basically, what it did was it set a precedent for abortion being a right that is contained within the Constitution underneath the 14th Amendment, protected by your right to privacy, protected by your right to due process. What does that mean? Well, let's read the 14th Amendment. I don't know. A lot of people have not read our Constitution. The Constitution is not very long. I think you should read it. You can get an app on your phone. I have an app on my phone, and whenever somebody has a question, I just pull it up. Well, let's look at this amendment and see what it says. It's not very long. I know that the language is not very modern, but I highly suggest you like take a trip through our constitutional amendments once in a while. All right, here, I'm pulling up my app right now so we can read it. It's just an app called the Constitution. One of the first things I got on my phone when I got a smartphone and I became a conservative. So here it is, the 14th Amendment. So this is the amendment that supposedly guarantees your right, your constitutional right to have an abortion. Here's section one. All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. No state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the law. Here's section two. I'm going to read it all because you need to know what the 14th Amendment says. And I want you to tell me if abortion's in here. Representatives shall be apportioned among the several states according to their respective numbers, counting the whole number of persons in each state, excluding Indians not taxed. But when the right to vote at any election for the choice of electors for president and vice president of the United States, representatives in Congress, the executive and judicial members, officers of a Senate, or the members of the legislature thereof is denied to any of the male inhabitants of such state being 21 years of age and citizens of the United States or in any way abridged except for participation in rebellion or other crime, the basis of representation therein shall be reduced in the proportion which the number of such male citizens shall bear to the whole number of male citizens 21 years of age in such state. Do you get that? It doesn't matter. Listen for the word abortion. No person shall be a senator or representative in Congress or elector of president or vice president or hold any office, civil or military, under the United States or under any state who, having previously taken an oath as a member of Congress or as an officer of the United States or as a member of any state legislature or as an executive or judicial officer of any state to support the Constitution of the United States shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof. But Congress may, by a vote of 2/3 of each house, remove such disability. Section 4 says the validity of the public debt of the United States authorized by law, including debts incurred for payment of pensions and bounties for services in suppressing insurrection or rebellion, shall not be questioned, but neither the United States nor any state shall assume or pay any debt or obligation incurred in aid of insurrection or rebellion against the United States or any claim for the loss or emancipation of any slave, but all such debts, obligations, and claims shall be held illegal and void. And Section 5, the Congress shall have the power to enforce by appropriate legislation the provisions of this article. So I didn't see the word abortion in there. I don't think you heard me read it in there. So yeah, there's no women aren't even mentioned. You know what I mean? Like, women aren't even in there. There's Indians, there's men 21 years of age and older. But the idea of anything having to do with the privacy of a woman's body, not in there. That was completely, excuse me, I feel stuttery today. I am having a week, y'all. Just having a real week. The school board stuff is taking its toll. All right. Anyways, so it's not in there, but I know what some of you are saying. You're going, well, it is in there. I heard you say that the state shall not deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. And technically the Roe case, I didn't read all of the oral arguments in Roe, and maybe Kristen can clear this up for us a bit more when she comes on. I've never read through all of the oral arguments. They're very long. It's a lot of legal ease. But I do believe that that's the argument being made, right? That the state will, by denying a woman a right to have an abortion, you're denying her the right to pursue her life, her liberty, her happiness, because this could be a real burden for her. Maybe it affects her health, or I think it was really meant to describe health issues, really. But obviously, since that time, the definitions have expanded. And at the time of Roe v. Wade, it was agreed that this only applied to first trimester abortions. But later on, there was another case in 92 that really expanded the definition to basically all trimesters, all three trimesters. But I know what you're saying. The argument here is that this is a life liberty thing, which my thing is, I was like, I agree totally, you guys. This absolutely, the state shall not deprive, let's read it again, shall not deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. I couldn't agree more. That's a very important amendment. Why doesn't it get to apply to a human being that's not been able to be born yet? Where does the rights of that little human being come in? The rights of that person who can't speak for herself yet. And there are all kinds of people that we protect in the Constitution who can't speak for themselves. They're protected anyway. So the ability to use your vocal cords or to speak, these are not qualifications for being allowed a defense of the Constitution. The Constitution is meant to defend those who might not have that ability to speak up for themselves. So, yeah, sure. But you got to have life. I understand that you might be saying, well, this baby could really harm a woman's ability to pursue her life and her liberty and her happiness. But what about the baby? Well, do they get life? That person certainly doesn't have due process. Maybe the best thing to do would be to let the baby be born, maybe wait until the baby can speak and be intelligent, and then go to court and see if that baby, who is now by that time a child or a teenager or an adult, wants to avail themselves of their due process. I don't know. That's just me. So I understand that the issue is heated, and I understand that there are a lot of you out there who just think that it's absolutely decided, but it's not. And one of the reasons, it was always a weak decision. It was always weak. Even Ruth Bader Ginsburg said that many years ago, that she didn't know if Roe v. Wade could survive a real judicial challenge, because it's just based on a lot of weakness. And she was right. I mean, we're seeing that she's right. She was absolutely right, because there just is no language in the Constitution, not in the 14th Amendment, that speaks to abortion. So it was completely fabricated and inserted or interpreted in there. And you may feel that it is a reasonable interpretation, and that's fine. I don't, but I can understand. Can you hear the helicopters? I'm sorry. There's a fire. It's fire season here in California, and there's a brush fire nearby, and it's actually getting out of hand in Laguna. So if you hear the helicopters, that's what's going on. God bless our firefighters. We have a lot wrong with the state of California, but one of the things we get right is our firefighting abilities. We have the best in the world. So anyway, I don't agree with you, but I can at least see your point of view. Like, hey, Kira, that life and liberty thing in the 14th Amendment, that's really important. And yada, yada, yada. Okay, fine. But at the very least, if you're going to be objective and reasonable about it, you can see why other people go, I don't see abortion in there. Right? It's not clear. It's not clear. You have to do some mental gymnastics to make it clear. So I think that's a reasonable position today to take. I don't think you need to be mad at people like me who say it's not in there. I just read you the 14th Amendment. It's not in there. It's definitely open to, I don't think it's open to interpretation. I mean, it's not in there to me. But there is a provision in the Constitution for laws that aren't, for rights that aren't enumerated. Right. The founding fathers had to add something to say, hey, just because it's not in here doesn't mean it's not a right. So there's all kinds of wiggle room here. I get it. I just think that there's no need to for you to be so insanely crazy about people like me when you actually read the 14th Amendment. You can see that there's room for debate at the least.
People don't like to get stuck. Stuck in traffic, stuck in the mud, stuck at work, and two others you probably don't think much about. Stuck with a big medical bill or stuck with a healthcare program that doesn't fit who you are. Experience true medical freedom with Share Healthcare. More affordable, more options, user-friendly, and biblically sound. You can join right now. Explore a new way to show you care with Share Healthcare. Join us today at sharehealthcare.com. Sharehealthcare.com.
Use the referral code FCBUSA. That's FCBUSA.
Now, Norma McCorvey went on to become a pro-life advocate, and she spoke at events, and she did the whole circuit, and she was very famous on the pro-life scene. She said she regretted it. She definitely regretted her abortion, and she regretted bringing the case. And then I think just a few years ago, she came out and said, I faked it all. I didn't really mean any of it. The pro-life lobby paid me a lot of money. And I said what they wanted me to say. I think I looked it up here. Let me look up what she had to say here. She said, I was reading about her daughter has come out. Let's see. Melissa Mills is McCorvey's eldest daughter. And she says she's in disbelief after the leak. She said, I can't believe it could take us back 50 years and there's going to be so many unnecessary deaths and people without what they need for healthcare to take care of themselves. I find it very ironic that the daughter of the person who brought us abortion is sad that abortion won't be codified in the Constitution. I don't know. It's a bit ironic. Here's what McCorvey said. She said, I was the big fish. I think it was a mutual thing. I took their money and they put me out in front of the cameras and told me what to say. And that's what I'd say. So she was not sincere. She did have a history of unplanned pregnancies. She had a history of drug addiction. And I think that's really what she was dealing with very much at the time when she was seeking that for that abortion that led to this now law or precedent. She struggled. And so maybe she just seems like the kind of person who probably struggled her whole life. It's not unusual for people just to take money to say whatever. Happens all the time in politics. So too bad. But that's her story. That's how that goes. So if Roe v. Wade is accepted precedent in the United States Constitution, perhaps not for much longer, what happens if and when the Supreme Court finally does release this decision? What happens to abortion? Now, this is where we're having a lot of trouble with this conversation. I think all of you who are freaked out over it probably believe that Roe v. Wade is the only deciding factor for whether or not abortion is legal. And you think that abortion is only legal because Roe v. Wade is supposedly in the Constitution. And if it's not in the Constitution anymore, abortion will be illegal. That is the messaging that the pro-abortion activists have thrown out there for years. That's not your fault that you believe that. That's just the messaging. And they've done very well with it. And because we have a very incurious media, people don't really follow up on that to see what that really means. So I understand that a lot of you think abortion is now going to be illegal. That's not what's going to happen at all. Roe v. Wade, oh, there were already states in 1969 when this decision was made or brought through the court system. There were, you could still get legal abortions in the United States. Even abortion was not illegal everywhere, although it was certainly more rare to be legal than it is now. Then it was certainly more frowned upon. But it was not illegal. You could travel to certain states. That was the whole thing about the life and liberty thing, right? They were saying this is undue stress and an undue burden on Jane Doe, because she's not wealthy. She's poor. She can't travel to another state for an abortion. So therefore, you can't give us the excuse that, well, she can go somewhere and get the abortion if she wants it so bad, because she can't because of her economic status. And that's discrimination. That's not giving her access to her due process. I feel like I'm twisting pretzels to get there, but that's the argument. But it was legal in spots. So it's not like all of a sudden, if there's no Roe, there's no abortion. Absolutely not. It just goes back to what it was before, which is the states get to decide. Now, some states decided through codifying it in their constitution. Some states codified anti-abortion language in their constitutions. Here in California, I believe the governor said that he wants to codify I think what he said was he wants to codify this as a sanctuary state for abortion. But I do believe we have abortion codified in the California Constitution. I'll double check on that. I bet Kristen will know. But I think what he was talking about was codifying us as a sanctuary state, because we need, you know, more abortion laws on more abortion laws, because we're California. We're super extra here. That's all that's going to happen. The decision will now go to your state, which I think would, once we get past this angsty part, I have always felt that that would be the solution to how contentious this issue is. Because then you're letting people decide. You're letting people have the choice. You're letting people argue and persuade. And so that's when you can go into your state and you can say, hey, I am going to work to persuade, to change minds. I want abortion to be legal. So I'm going to join with all of these other activists and I am going to lobby my legislators and I am going to demand that they put this law in the books, or vice versa. That's all that means. So now you get to make the argument for it. And then you get to go and convince your fellow citizens to vote your way. Now, if you have a problem with that, then you have a problem with democracy. You have a problem with the democratic process. And I know you're saying, no, but it's a right, but it's not a right. I think reading the decision and reading the 14th Amendment, there's all kinds of room there to reason out why it's not a legitimately codified right. But the good news is that you can, good news for you, is that you can work to have it codified in your own state constitution. All this says is that the federal government doesn't get to decide this for your state. Now, I think one of the reasons why you're so angry is because you know that you can't really convince people that this is a good thing. I know what the statistics say. Up until recently, they have said that most Americans favor abortion. I think we tipped that in 2016, I think, for the first time in many decades. Americans have shifted to a pro-life stance. And they keep going further towards pro-life, the crazier the pro-abortion crowd gets. Like, you know, when you hear the Virginia governor, Ralph Northam, on a radio program asking if Democrats, what a Democrat would do or what a doctor should do with a baby who survives an abortion and happens to be born alive. And he says, well, we keep the baby comfortable until the mother can have a conversation with the doctor about what they want to do about the baby. That's super cuckoo nuts crazy. Right. You can't, like, that's, it's really hard to sell that position, which is 100% infanticide, to even even people on your own side, even to a reasonable person, that's insane. So I don't know if I believe all of the hysterics out there now that are like, most people like abortion in this country. Most people want abortion. I don't believe that. And I think you don't either. And that's why you think you need the court to put their thumb on the scale to tip it this way. Because I think you don't believe in your ability to convince people that we should have the right to kill our babies in the womb. I don't think you can make the argument. And I think that's why you feel so passionately about the Supreme Court. I've said this about SCOTUS before. If Americans would stop demanding that SCOTUS be political, they wouldn't freak out every time it's time to appoint a new justice. You wouldn't have to freak out when you get a guy like Trump in there and he gets this perfect storm of SCOTUS vacancies and basically gets to shift the entire court in just 1 4-year term, which is a miracle in itself and probably a once in a lifetime event. But you wouldn't have to freak out about the Trumps of the world if you stopped making the Supreme Court the arbiter of your politics, right? Politics should stay in your legislature. And the Supreme Court is simply there to apply the Constitution to questionable matters. Oh, the good news is, though, is that you can go back to that. You can make the decision to be that person if you want and then just go to your state and advocate. Like, and I know, I get it. I can hear you yelling at me right now. You're going, but Kira, I live in a red state and these people around here are backwards and they're misogynist and they're never. Okay, I live in a blue state and these people here are backwards and they're misogynist. And like, I can say all of the same things about my blue state people that you say about your red state people. We just are saying them from different sides of the fence. And I hate it. Yes, of course I hate it. I don't want abortion to be legal. I think it's wrong. But I also believe and know that I live in a blue state. And I am a minority voter here when it comes to my politics. I understand that. And I accept it begrudgingly. And I still intend to always advocate on the side of life. But it's naive and unfair of me to think that everyone in the state has to think like me and therefore has to vote like me. It's up to me to make my case and persuade people and let them make their decisions. And right now, you know what? This is a blue state. And we're not going to be persuading this state to be pro-life anytime soon. I have to accept that as a voter and as a resident of this state. And I have, and I can. You have to accept it too. This is a two-way street.
This is Darvio Kingpin Morrow, CEO of the FCB Radio Network and producer of this show, Just Listen to Yourself with Kira Davis. To the subscribers of this incredible show, first of all, thank you. Second, I want you to add another show to your podcast rotation, my show, The Outlaws Radio Show. We are an entertaining and informative show that talks about everything from pop culture to politics. Nothing's off limits. My co-host Robin O'Malley brings you the latest news and gossip in the entertainment world on our segment, Tea Time with Ro. My other co-host, Dante Bry, rants on political issues in our segment, Dante's Hot Takes. And also, we bring you some of the best interviews with people in the worlds of politics, entertainment, culture, and more. We're a lighthearted show that doesn't judge you for the way you vote, and we don't spend our time shoving media narratives down people's throats. If that sounds like the show for you, subscribe to the Outlaws Radio Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your podcasts. That's OUTLAWS, The Outlaws Radio Show.
The freakouts on social media over this decision have been simultaneously hilarious and really, really heartbreaking. I actually am devastated to see how many people have banked their whole identities on this and are so ill-informed of what's going to happen. Now, good news is for my pro-life friends out there who are listening, good news for us is that a lot of our pro-abortion friends have finally heard the whole states' right thing. Right now they're making arguments against states' rights, but those are arguments they were never making in the first place because they didn't know. So that's kind of a victory in itself. The freakout has led to this greater awareness of the feds versus the states. And so there are people who are like, oh, well, you can't leave it to the states because then when we're going to read some of those reactions. But I don't see a person freaking out over unreasonable things, although that's what they're doing. I see a person who's actually heard and understood for the first time that repealing Roe v. Wade just means that the states get to decide for themselves. I'm going to call that progress. I'm going to call it progress, even though people will still find arguments against it, because abortion really is it's an issue of faith. It's a matter of faith. It really is. On my side of the fence, for most of us, this is not all of us are people of faith on the pro-life side. I actually have quite a few atheist friends who find abortion to be anti-human. But you either have faith in like a God or creator, or you have faith in humanity. It's a faithful belief. And then on the other side, you have faith that it is the most important sacrament for a woman to be able to make this decision for herself and the baby that lives inside her. You're not going to get people to change their faith overnight, at least. So I do want to read some of the freakouts and respond to those. Before I do that, though, I want to make one note about the SCOTUS leak. I definitely think it was coordinated. I definitely think that the ruling party in Washington had something to do with the leak. And we can kind of see, because they weren't really keen to condemn it, even though that is really, it's not unprecedented from what I understand. It's not unprecedented, but it is pretty rare and considered to be very, very dangerous and very bad form for a leak like this to come from SCOTUS. SCOTUS makes a lot of huge decisions that affect our whole country, and they have to be able, and I mean this, they have to be able to do that in privacy and secrecy until it's time to, because they have to be able to hash out these arguments, and sometimes they change their minds, right? And you don't want to be pressured. You don't want any pressure from the public when you're making your decision. You don't want to feel like you're making your decision because you're getting input from the public. You want to make sure that decision making is only based on what you and your colleagues are discussing and opining about. I remember when I first started doing in radio and podcasting, and I used to love Rush Limbaugh. I listened to Rush Limbaugh every single day. And when I started doing radio, I realized I can't listen to Rush anymore. Not because I didn't love him and he's not great, but because I could never be sure if he's so influential. His voice is so strong that I could never be sure if I wasn't just parroting talking points, or if I was actually thinking and ruminating on these things myself. And so to be sure, I stopped listening to him. And I still would pop in, you know, up until he died, still would pop in when something big happened. I'd be like, I want to know what Rush thinks. But for the most part, I just found his voice too influential. And it's the same kind of concept with SCOTUS. You know, there's a lot of influences they need to be able to have very sensitive discussions without outside, I don't even want to say influence, but just outside noise. It's just very important. And I know we have a lot of problems with, quote, traditional institutions in this country, but there is some measure of respect you should have for the institution, for the historical institutions of this country. So I do believe that the SCOTUS link was abhorrent. And I think that people who feel like that was the right thing to do, I think that you are wrong. Not only do I think you're wrong, I think you're dangerous. And again, I just think the only way for you to truly understand what I'm saying is to both sides it. Go ahead and both sides it. Ask yourself if that's what you would want to happen. Were the roles reversed and it was a Trump in office, and it was a different kind of decision that, you know, that you really wanted, and then you thought that Trump's people leaked it because they wanted to cause trouble. Do you know what I mean? Both sides it. Try to do that. I think if you're intellectually honest, you would. And by the way, if you want to say, I know it's wrong and I don't care, great. I would rather you say that. Good for you. I'm actually like high five. I always want people to be honest about, just be honest. That's it. I'm not going to try to change your mind if you're like, yeah, you know what? I do think that it's kind of sucky, but I'm glad this person did it. Then no judgment from me. Good for you for being honest. But say that. Don't just pretend that it's some kind of sacred moral principle that you're holding up. So that, yeah, the leak is reprehensible and immoral. And anybody who is protesting these justices at their home is reprehensible and immoral. And it's just disgusting. It's just disgusting because we're not talking about SCOTUS suddenly repealing the women's right to vote, which we'll get to in these freakouts. We're not talking about that. Or suddenly repealing the First Amendment. I could kind of see that people might get really upset. We're talking about something that doesn't change anything except who gets to decide on abortions. That's it. Let's get to some of these freakouts so I can read them to you. And I hope I know a lot of y'all aren't even listening anymore, but I'm going to do it anyway in the hopes that one of you may be trapped in a car with your conservative daughter or your mom who's a fan of the show and you can't turn the radio off and you are forced to listen. But I want to read these freakouts and I want to explain why some of them are absolutely ridiculous and sad. All right, here's one. And I caught these right, the news broke at like 7 o'clock my time. And I was on Reddit at like 7:30, just snapping pictures of people freaking out. So all of these hot takes are super hot. They're scalding, fresh off the presses at the time. Okay, so here's one who said, I've been considering getting my uterus cauterized for a while now. I never want kids. Now this is just fuel for the fire to get this done. I don't understand this argument. I saw so many women post that. I'm gonna get my husband snipped. I'm gonna get my boyfriend snipped. Or I'm boycotting sex. Or I'm going to go get my tubes tied right now. What are you saying? Are you saying that abortion is birth control? Because birth control is actually not a right. And also, you've been telling us for years that you want abortion to be safe, to be legal. A lot of y'all have said rare, although the more and more these days, you guys have given up the rare and just want it on demand. So there's still some old school politicians and some like more conservative pro-choicers will say that too. Like, I want it safe, legal, rare. S.E. Cup comes to mind. She's on CNN and she says that a lot. She wants it to be safe, legal, and rare. But to me, what this is saying is like, I don't know, like, are you saying that your only recourse if you get pregnant is an abortion, is to walk into an abortion clinic? Are you saying that you cannot engage in sexual activity unless you know you can get an abortion on demand? That sounds crazy. It sounds bizarre. Like, I don't know, use a freaking condom. Get an IUD. Abstain from sex. You know, there's so many options for you these days. Like the idea that suddenly, oh, if I can't get an abortion, then I'm just going to have this whole thing ripped out of me. And as if that's some kind of act of revenge. Also, like, honestly, if you're so committed to abortion that you're actually planning on having an abortion someday, maybe it is better for you to go get your uterus taken out and then you can spare a child that horror, right? You can spare a baby that horror. I'm not going to litigate whether or not I think abortion is wrong. I've told you, you can go back to my episodes and I can justify, make the abortion argument. Kristen and I will talk more about it. I believe abortion is wrong. I believe abortion is wrong in all circumstances, even rape and incest. Yes, because you punish two people then. It's not a matter of when it's okay and when it's not to me. I'm just going to put this out there for you so you know exactly where I'm at moving forward in these arguments. A life starts at the moment of conception. It can't start anywhere else. It's never been scientifically proven to start anywhere else. And yet there is not a single person on, in the entire planet in all of human history that wasn't first that little flash of light when sperm meets egg and makes embryo. So it's, to me, it's not a question of what's a bad circumstance for a woman to have a baby in and what's a good one. It's a question of when is a baby a baby. And so should you kill a baby? You I would ask you that if you were raped when your baby was 3 years old and it caused you a lot of distress and you realize I can't provide for this 3 year old anymore. Should you be allowed to kill the 3 year old? Because you just can't make a good life for that 3 year old anymore. You're in distress. You're traumatized. It's, to me, that's the same question. I know you're going, that's not the same thing. That's a different argument. This is not what this show is about. That's a question of where life starts. So, but you need to know. So when I say I'm not in favor of abortion, even in cases of rape and incest, it's not because I don't care about what happens to a woman when she is impregnated in a terrible circumstance. That's not it at all. My question, it is because I believe that is still a person. It's a person inside of your body. It's because I believe that is a child, that is life. So I would no more approve of you killing your 3 year old than I would of you killing your 3 day old embryo. Same thing for me. You may find that unreasonable, but again, that's a whole different topic. We're not going to talk about that. Let's see. Somebody replied here. What sucks is that many doctors won't do that until a certain age, because what if you change your mind and your husband wants a child? Shut up and singe the tubes. Ladies, I don't, so many bitter ladies have such a problem with this. But that is such a, that's a folly of youth, isn't it? I'm coming at you with 47 years behind me, and there's a lot of stuff I said as a young woman, including I never want to be a mother, that I look back at now and think, gosh, that was really dumb and silly. And the fact that they would think that it's, that doctors don't want to do this because they somehow want to control a woman's body instead of taking seriously their oath to advise you on what the future can hold for you. What a doctor is not saying, I want to keep you enslaved in motherhood. A doctor is saying, I have seen enough women over the span of many years. I have seen those women grow and mature and age to know that almost all women regret it. Almost every woman wants to be a mother at some point. That's statistical. That's almost every woman wants to be a mother at some point. And when you're 32, you think you're going to live forever. I have a 20-year-old son. He thinks he's going to live forever. The whole mortality thing hasn't hit him yet. How do you think we get shows like Jackass? Those guys, now they just quit because they know they're not going to live forever. But, you know, I was reading an interview with Johnny Knoxville, and he was like, yeah, when we started this show, I thought I was going to live forever. And now I'm 45, and I'm like, I'm definitely not going to live forever. Things change. Doctors know that your notions of your body and what you want out of life are going to change. Doctors know that a lot changes when you find a partner that you want to settle down with. A lot changes. So a doctor doesn't want to take that ability from you, doesn't want to rip out healthy, functioning organs, which is a violation of a medical mandate. You know, they don't want to do that, knowing that the chances are really high that you're going to come back someday with deep, deep regret. And then some procedures, I think like a tubal can be reversed or repaired in some way, but it's more surgery. So women get so arrogant about that, but don't be so arrogant about wisdom, ladies. This is why I always tell my young friends who tell me I don't want kids or I'm going to wait for kids. I don't even try to be sensitive about it anymore. Cause you know what? No one tells young women the truth anymore, that you can do a lot of things to look and stay feeling young these days. You can get Botox, you can get plastic surgery, you can take yoga classes, you can do blood, what are these, like the Kardashians do these blood infusions or these vitamin infusions. You can do all this stuff, but your ovaries and your uterus ages at the same rate as it always has throughout human history. And once you hit 32, your chances of conceiving naturally, if you haven't conceived already before that point, diminish by huge percentage points every year, something between 5 and 15% every year until you hit your 40s. And then it's nearly impossible. And I know women, most women, who will say at some point, I'd like a family. I want a child. I wish I had. I should have. So I always tell ladies, you don't have all the time in the world. So don't fool yourself into thinking that you do. Now, if you don't want to have kids, then accept that. And then later on down the road, you'll have to accept that that's the decision you made at this point in your life. But I don't know if the younger you should be making those kind of life decisions for the older you. Because if you're a decent human being, the older you is going to be a lot smarter than the younger you. And maybe you should just give that older person a chance to do what they think is going to be best for y'all, based on the wisdom that they've accrued over the years. So fans of this show know my feelings about Black Lives Matter. So you definitely need to know about this documentary that I just watched, BLM Aftermath. It's a documentary series that explores the devastating consequences of BLM's so-called activism and political maneuvering. In 2020, a movement was born out of genuine frustrations, and it was hijacked by Marxist groups looking to advance agendas that have nothing to do with the Black community. And they've been taking advantage of the communities they say they help ever since. You guys know how I feel about this because I've done several episodes now on this topic. If you think I'm using hysterical buzzwords, I'm just being mispolitical here. The proof is in the pudding. Not only are they plagued with accusations of fraud and failing to disperse its nearly $60 million in funding to local BLM groups, but the aftermath of their summer of rioting and political activism has been to weaken vital law enforcement services in urban areas, putting citizens at risk, stripping them of their safety and their opportunities for justice. So BLM Aftermath tells the story of the devastation and pain left in the wake of professional activists who ripped through their communities and then left local citizens to sort through the ugliness themselves. Episode 2 in particular covers Cleveland. It's directed by a Cleveland native and entrepreneur, Darvio Morrow. And Morrow uses footage from the 2020 summer protests in that city and interviews law enforcement, politicians, community activists. All these people have a much, much, much different story to tell the world than what the BLM activists and their media allies would have us believe. These are stories of real people on the ground, working every day to support the Black community. People who were promised results and instead were left with more problems than they could have ever imagined. BLM Aftermath is the true story of what happened to the real people of these very real communities once the activists left town. And you want to know how threatened they are and how threatened their allies are by this documentary series? Then you should know that YouTube attempted to censor BLM Aftermath Cleveland. Now, I wasn't going to let that sit. So I and others helpfully reminded them that they were censoring a Black filmmaker telling the story of his Black experience in the Black community that is still suffering the dire consequences of the Black Lives Matter movement. You guys, please be sure to catch episode 2 of this eye-opening documentary directed by Darvio Morrow, BLM Aftermath Cleveland. You can find it on YouTube, and they have removed the censorship warnings, or go to blmaftermath.com to find out more about the series and how you can support the people on the ground telling the real stories. That's blmaftermath.com or search BLM Aftermath Cleveland online. Here's another one. A lot of women will be forced to raise babies that look like they're rapists, and the abortions some women are able to get will be unsafe. What a bunch of MFing scumbags. This is the other idea. Okay, do you know the percentage of women who seek out abortions because they are pregnant as a result of rape? Do you know? This is a huge argument. People use this argument all the time, but do you know the percentage? It's less than 1%. It's a little less than 1%, but let's round it up. 1%. And because of incest, it's 0.5%. Less than that. We'll round it up. 0.5%. It is a fraction of a fraction of women. And yet this is the number one argument that people make because they want to throw fear in our face, right? And still, you might be saying, well, still, Kira, those that 1% of women, however many women that represents a year, you know, if it's a few hundred women a year, still, they shouldn't be forced, as this person say, forced to raise a baby that looks like they're a rapist. Okay, this argument assumes so many nasty things. One, it assumes that a woman has to raise her child. My mother got pregnant at 16, and she gave that baby up for adoption. And that baby went on to be adopted by a nice American family and he grew up into a lovely young man with a lovely family of his own. Adoption is not just an option for you as a woman. It is a coveted option for infants, right? The adoption market for infants is and always has been hot. People want to raise a child from a baby. So you're not going to have any problems placing an infant in a good home. So there's that. Well, then, Kira, why does she have to be punished carrying that child for 9 months? Who says it's a punishment? See, there is this misconception that a woman who carries a baby in rape will be bitter and will be bitter towards that baby. Now, I'm there on this show all the time. I try not to do qualifiers. I hate having to qualify statements all the time, but I'll qualify this. We all know that there are plenty of parents out there who aren't great parents. And I'm sure that there are some women out there who had a baby due to rape and it affected how she raised the baby. But those people are the exception, not the rule. I think you've got to be an exceptionally bitter and sad and lonely person to believe that it's going to be the default for a woman who is carrying a life inside her to hate the baby of the rape of the person who took advantage of her and created that baby. Because you'd be surprised. I know you would be surprised. I'm not surprised, but you'd be surprised at how many stories there are of women out there who said it was the only thing that healed me. It was the only thing that kept me sane. How can life thriving be wrong? How can a thriving life, and it is the greatest thing in the world to carry another human being inside of you. It is the most amazing experience. It's gross, and I didn't really like it. And still, I still think it is the most amazing experience. It changes you. It changes you. I mean, physically. It changes you physically. Some things for the better, some things for the worse. But it changes everything about you. It is the most empowering and healing thing. It's life. It's not a tumor. It's a child. And a lot of stuff happens to your body when you are now housing an infant. Your chemistry changes. Your very basic biology changes. You suddenly start, you're literally fused with this person, and it creates an almost spiritual experience. And there are many, many, many women who have conceived a child in rape who have said it was my pregnancy that kept me sane, that kept me on pointing at true north, that kept me from being in despair. It gave me hope. And they don't see their rapist when they look at their child. They see their child. It's just such a cynical view of children and babies. That a woman looks at the child and sees the man who took advantage of her. I actually don't know any woman who has been through a terrible relationship or a terrible experience that has said that. They think their child is the most beautiful thing in the world. I was a huge reminder to my mother of the man who left her, abandoned her while she was pregnant, left her with nothing, treated her like crap. I mean, she was a white lady living in an all-white part of an all-white country, basically, and in the 70s. And I stood out like a sore thumb. And for her, according to you, I should have been a reminder every single day of her pain. But that's not how she raised me. She raised me like a mother who thought I was the most beautiful child that ever walked the face of the earth. I didn't have to endure my mother going, oh, you look just like your father. And I did look just, I still do look just like my father. These dimples are my dad's family's dimples. That's not what she saw. What a cynical view of babies. What a tragically sad and cynical view. Sometimes, and this is why, another reason why I can't condone abortion, even in rape, because I often think you are robbing a mother. You are robbing that woman of the thing that would be healing to her. Now you're compounding her pain, because women have abortions and they don't. I don't believe all of those women on TikTok who I've had abortions and they're so great. If it hasn't caught up with them now, it will later. But most women suffer. Most women. That's why you have people like Whoopi Goldberg was on The View the other day going, you know, we shouldn't be so flippant about this. Abortion is a really tough decision. Well, why? Why is abortion a tough decision? If there's no moral value to it, then why does a woman agonize over abortion? It's because innately she knows that this is a natural process of her body, and it's unnatural to separate this process of life growing inside of her from her body. And when she does, she feels it. I had a friend once who was pro-abortion, and she had an abortion. She was raped and she chose to have the abortion. And many, many years later, many years later, 20 years later, she told me, and I didn't even know she had had this abortion. And she told me, and she said, I'm going to cry thinking of it. She said, I still dream about that baby. I gave him a name. I was like, oh my gosh, what? Like, she had named the baby. She got an abortion like really early, like almost right away, you know, as soon as she found out, like right away. And she was like, I thought it would be okay. And it wasn't. I was like, I was just torn apart. And then whenever I would try to talk to people, they would be like, oh, that's just society making you feel guilty. Don't, you know, don't worry about it. It was just a clump of cells. And she's like, I dream about him. It was a boy. I won't say the name. It was a boy, she said. I named him. And I still dream about him. And so there's consequences for these things. It's so heartless to be like, you're going to force a baby to raise a child with the face of her rapist. What do you, how do you look at children? Some of you are really broken. Here's one. It's going to kill children by the bucket load. Well, that's what abortion does, literally. Anyway, it boggles me. They're choosing to murder children. You could argue abortion is killing a fetus if you want to get all up in it, but it's still a fetus. It's pretty damn different to people outright smothering babies. So this is person has set up a false dichotomy, right? Like it's either kill the baby in the womb or someone's going to kill the baby when it leaves the womb. Like, these are the only two choices, that if a woman has a baby that she doesn't want, she's going to kill it, rather than a woman falls in love with the baby she thinks she doesn't want, which is what happens more often than not. I mean, my goodness, they're going to kill children by the bucket load. That's what abortion does. And let's just say, let's take this argument. Okay. Okay, fine. The choice is kill a baby after it's born or kill a baby before it's born. Those are the two choices you're setting up. You're still setting up murder either way. And all you're doing is arguing over at which point it's best to murder a baby. It doesn't make sense. This one lady says, I'm scared, angry, hopeless. I can't even describe how this makes me feel. Angry, hopeless, what? Hopeless for what? What hope has been taken away from you? The hope that you, what is so hopeless about this? I can't even describe how this makes me feel. My boyfriend just held me while I tried not to let the emotions overtake me. I'm sorry to laugh, but honestly, my state recently tried to ban abortions even for ectopic pregnancies. This is a fallacy. This is a lie. Ending an ectopic pregnancy is not abortion, because that pregnancy is not, it's not just that it's not viable. It's actually not even really a pregnancy. There's no where for that embryo to grow. The embryo has fallen on unfertile soil, so to speak. The embryo, were it to grow, which it cannot grow in an ectopic pregnancy, at some point the growth will be retarded, were it to grow would kill the mother. So this is actually a medical issue. I think it's the people who are hysterical who bring the ectopic thing into it, because again, that's just, it's a red flag. I would call it like, it's a false flag. And it is the idea is to get people upset that, look, they don't care about women. There's no law that says that. There's no law anywhere that will outlaw ectopic abortions. And that is a woman who didn't read her state's proposed law. And so do I need to go read the Texas? Maybe that's what I need to do next as a bonus. I'll go read that Texas abortion law so you can see. But this is actually a lie. I'll just call it that. It's not even irrational. It's not even like faulty reasoning. It's just a lie. It's absolutely a lie. All right. Here's somebody who says, this is what I find so terrifying. This is the first step in undoing a lot of freedom for women and LGBTQ communities. Well, how? Explain that to me. How is this going to undo freedom for? I don't know what that means. I don't know what that means. Does this mean that somehow, I think there were some people who were saying that SCOTUS could maybe overturn gay marriage or something. But tell me how. Explain the process. Show your work. How will that work? How does SCOTUS overturn? Again, SCOTUS didn't overturn abortion, everyone. SCOTUS simply said maybe. And again, this is all maybes because we don't have the actual decision yet. We're only arguing over a potential draft. But SCOTUS has not overturned abortion. All it has said is that it is not codified in our federal constitution. So it's up to states to deal with it how they see fit. This woman says, I'm a mixture of denial and horrified. The people backing this say they're, quote, pro-life. There is nothing pro-life about this. I don't know what's not pro-life about asking for a baby to be born, but whatever. Okay, it's not taking into consideration the life of the woman whose responsibility it is to carry and birth the child. It actually is. Again, I made you my case for why women who conceive their children in very questionable or scary circumstances often are healed and uplifted by the birth of their children. Their children are not diseases. Their children are not tumors. Their children turn out to be wonderful gifts. And once a child is born, if the mother is unable to financially care for the child, these pro-lifers are adamantly against helping it in any way. Again, absolutely not true. This argument drives me crazy. And it is not just a childish argument, but like, frankly, an effing stupid one. Sorry to be blunt. It's ignorant and it's the sign to me of a lazy helper. You're somebody who doesn't want to help, because if you did want to help women, then you would know that there are all kinds of programs out there who walk with a woman all the way from the moment she knows that she is pregnant until her child is in high school. I have had the privilege of working with those women. Those programs and centers are all over the place. There's a great organization called Embrace Grace. My friend Amy Ford runs it. And it's actually a private institution. They don't even have, like, I think, main offices. She just kind of runs it as a national organization. But if you have a woman in your community, your church or whatever, she's a single mom, she's in a situation where she's going to have this unexpected baby, then, and you call Amy, she'll fly out, she'll throw a baby shower for this woman, make sure she has everything she needs. She'll get the woman hooked up with medical services, and then she will provide resources and guidance for that woman as long as that woman needs the help. So yes, that means making sure she can find babysitting, helping her on the first day of kindergarten, helping her get her kid into school. It never stops. It never stops. These are talking points that you say because that's what you would do. It's projection. That's what you would do. You would abandon the mother, right, who had a child that you think she shouldn't have. Your response would be to abandon her. And that's what you think everybody else would do. But that's not what everybody else does. In fact, that's hardly what anybody else does. And so I would encourage you to start volunteering and start getting to know people and know the work that people do very quietly. Most people don't need accolades, and they don't want your accolades for sure because you don't even know what's going on. So I hate that argument. It's just so ridiculous and just uninformed. These people are also the people who don't want sex education in the school. Wrong. or Planned Parenthoods in the neighborhood. Yeah, I sure as hell don't want a Planned Parenthood in my neighborhood. A Planned Parenthood in my neighborhood? No, thank you. There were two in my old neighborhood, and that neighborhood, oh, just so happened to be almost all black. I don't know where the Planned Parenthood is around here in this white area of Orange County, but I sure as hell could have told you where it was in Gary, Indiana, where both of them were. Both within walking distance of my house. Planned Parenthood was founded by a woman whose explicit goal was to reduce the black population. So no, I don't want a Planned Parenthood in my neighborhood. Bye. I don't want sex education in the school. I just want biology in the school. I just want science in the school. I don't need anyone to teach my kid about when and where it's okay to have sex. Teach my kids how their organs work. It's not, that's not weird. There, she says, there's nothing pro-life about any of it. They are solely pro my way is the only way and F everyone else. Well, that's you. That's what you're doing. Your way is the only way and F everyone else, right? I mean, come on. I know. I told you these were all super hot takes. People were mad.
This is Darvio Kingpin Morrow, co-host of the Outlaws Radio Show. And if you haven't heard our show before, check out this clip.
Batya Unger Sarga.
It's really about this class divide that we're seeing in America. What happened was over the last 20 years, journalists and other intellectuals, college professors, people in the entertainment industry, they have become increasingly separated from the rest of America, from working class Americans, from lower middle class Americans, from poor Americans, and they've really become part of the elites. So journalism used to be this like working class trade. It used to be basically like being an electrician. You made around the same amount of money as an electrician or a plumber. Today, journalism is part of the American elites. If you're a journalist working in America today, you start off making very little money, but having to live in very expensive cities, which means you have to be rich, you have to come from money, right? And by the end of your career, you're in the top 10%. And so I argue that as journalists have sort of undergone this status revolution, they really stopped writing for or about the working class, and they've started instead to sort of consolidate their power the way that elites always do.
Subscribe to the Outlaws Radio Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your podcasts. That's OUTLAWS, the Outlaws Radio Show, an FCB radio podcast.
Some weirdo said the U.S. is trying to boost birth rates because politicians realize they effed the economy and none of us want kids. And then somebody said, joke's on them, I'll kill myself before I push out a baby. Two birds with one stone. And then somebody else replied, yeah, same. I'm luckily getting sterilized next month. But suicide is a very real possibility for me if I ever got pregnant and couldn't get an abortion. My mental health has only been stable for maybe a year, and something like a forced pregnancy would tip me over the edge again. It is just, again, this is, oh, Jesus. I thought I was going to laugh at that person, but I'm also a little emotional this week because I'm having a rough week. This is a sign of a culture that has given up the notion that we are each created on purpose and with purpose. This is a sign of a society that has left behind God and instead decided to focus on the self, self-love, self-esteem, self-actualizing. Self-care, everything is centered around the self. And the problem is that we are all innately aware that our self is twisted and riddled with holes that we can't ever seem to fill. We all have that sense about us, all of us, whether or not we believe in a higher being or not, we all have this sense that something is missing inside of us. And yet the world is telling us that we're supposed to look inside of us for the answers. No wonder so many people are so sad that they hate themselves so much that they would say, if I got pregnant, I would kill myself because a pregnancy would tip me over the edge. I beg to differ. A pregnancy might actually do the opposite for you. Parenthood focuses you and it takes you outside of yourself. Something that depressed people need to do. We have to learn to do that. When I was first diagnosed with depression I'm going to do an episode on depression, I think, coming up here soon, because I have some evolving thoughts on the issue. But when I was first diagnosed with depression, you know, one of the things that my therapist, I had an excellent therapist, loved her so much. I was so blessed to have an amazing therapist my first time out, because I hear horror stories. But she just like literally changed my life, like literally saved my life. She was so great. And one of the things she said was, you need to be focusing on things outside of yourself as well. So in therapy, we get to explore what's going on with you. But then it's really important for you to have outside focuses, focus on your kids, focus on your after school program. Do something that you like. Go serve someone. That was a really big thing. Go serve. And a lot of therapists will tell you that. So parenting really like takes you out of yourself and helps you focus on other things. So the idea that she would say that, you know, just so cavalierly, these are broken people. And also, this is Reddit, where a lot of broken people go to live. This person says, excuse me while I make appointments to get my tubes tied and for a vasectomy for my husband. Again, is abortion your birth control? Is that what's going on here? Abortion should not be birth control. It is surgery. It is surgery. Forget about what it does to the baby inside of you, which is horrific. That being said, it's surgery. And all surgery is risky. But abortion is especially a risky surgery. And it can really mess you up in other ways for the rest of your life. Again, I don't understand why. Like, and then maybe fine. If this is the attitude you're going to go into parenthood with. At some point, maybe it is fine that you just do the SNPs now, and then the people who love children and want children, that's who will be populating the earth. And then you'll wonder, gosh, why are people becoming more pro-life? Well, more of us are having babies. Some Republican pro-life women are in for a rude awakening when someone reports their miscarriage as a possible abortion. That is a lie. This was a clever one. Birth rates are on the decline, so they needed to figure out some way to keep the corporate slaves coming down the pipeline. Yes, that's what SCOTUS was doing. SCOTUS was just sitting there for the last 4 years going, we need to figure out, we need a case to come down so we can create more corporate slaves. Someone bring us a case. This lady says, I've carried 2 children and had them cut from my body. I'm assuming she means C-section, not forcibly cut. It was grueling. My body has never been the same. Do I love my kids? Yes. Am I happy to be a mother? Yes. Because I chose that life. I chose that risk. Being forced into a full-term pregnancy is the cruelest form of torture for a woman. What? Pregnancy is not torture. Well, it's kind of sucky. I didn't like it. I have friends who love it. I didn't really like being pregnant. But it was still the greatest thing on earth. My goodness. What is the difference? What is the difference between... These people are basing what life is on whether or not the life is wanted. That's the judge of whether or not an abortion is okay. It's who wanted them. This mom says it's okay for me because I wanted these babies. But if I didn't want these babies, then the abortion is fine. It doesn't make any sense. Forced into, again, they're talking about women being forced into these pregnancies. And there are a lot of things. And I think, again, all of these conversations are sort of revolving around this idea that there's this like women are being raped every single day and popping up in clinics with rape induced pregnancies every single day. And those women make up less than 1% of women who seek abortions. Most of the women who seek abortions have had voluntary sex and have decided they don't want the baby. So there are other options rather than killing your baby. There are other options for you. All right. I'll end with this one because I know this is going long. But this one I was like projection much. The writing's on the wall. Unless it's spelled out in the text of the Constitution, it's a privilege now, not a right. Again, it never was spelled out in the Constitution. That was the problem. That's what RBG said. That's what she always said. It was going to be a problem later down the road. So this is a person who doesn't know what Roe v. Wade is, but whatever. It's a privilege now, not a right. Yes, it's always been a privilege. Anything and everything that Republicans don't like and isn't protected by an amendment is on the chopping block. Okay. Gay marriage gone. I don't know how. Again, show me how. Do your work. By the way, it's not necessarily crazy to think that if there were a case that came, that the Supreme Court might say gay marriage is not an issue for the federal government to decide. But again, that doesn't make it go away. It just means that the feds aren't going to decide the issue. Contraception gone. I don't know how. Is there a constitutional amendment against contraception? Not sure. Anti-sodomy laws, totally fair game. Again, I don't know how. Anti-sodomy laws were, by the way, that's a state thing, right? Maybe I need to read the Constitution again. Is there a protection for sodomy in the United States Constitution? Correct me if I'm wrong, JLTY@protonmail.com. Otherwise, I think that's your state legislatures. And I think there are some little towns in some places that still have anti-sodomy laws on the books. Anti-hate crime legislation. Who needs it? Well, hate crime legislation is ridiculous because crime is already illegal. F it. At this rate, I could see indentured servitude making a comeback. Okay. School segregation? Why the hell not? All right, who are the people trying to segregate schools right now? This is the one that made me laugh. Segregation is what liberals are trying to bring us through critical race theory. They are literally bringing segregation back. Your safe spaces, your black spaces, your no white people. This is a BIPOC space. Segregation. Remember that Atlanta school? I need to check up on this case. I don't know where it's gone, but I was on Lawrence's show on Fox News talking about this case of the Atlanta mom, black mom in a largely black school district who was suing the school district because she found out the school was segregating her children by race. And she wanted her black child to have a certain teacher. And she called the principal and was like, I don't like this other teacher. I think she needs to have this teacher. And the principal said, well, that's the white teacher. We can't put her in the white class. That's for the white students. And we don't have any other black teachers for your daughter. So she has to have this one. Y'all are the ones bringing segregation back. And it is totally illegal. And by the way, we will defeat it under the Constitution by applying constitutional laws. So I've gone on long enough. I could go on and on and on about abortion. I'm going to have Kristen Hawkins on and we'll break down all of this stuff even further. She'll be way smarter than I am. She'll have a lot more details and arguments to make. I'll say this, that your freakouts are not warranted. And if you would just follow my advice that I give you all the time on this show, you wouldn't have to feel like your whole life is collapsing because the Supreme Court is poised to overturn a precedent that probably shouldn't have been there in the first place. If you would just take my advice and stop making your judicial system political, then you don't have to worry about what choices the Supreme Court makes. The Supreme Court should be making every effort to make sure that the federal government is legislating as little as possible. All of these should be at your state level where you have the most control as a voter and as an activist. And then it's up to you to go and advocate for your beliefs at your state capitol with your representatives. If you don't think you can convince people, then maybe you need to re-examine the position that you are taking. Maybe you're wrong. Again, I think abortion is wrong in all circumstances. I don't think, and no, that doesn't include ectopic pregnancies because that's not an abortion. That's a medical procedure because that's not even a viable pregnancy. That pregnancy is not going to survive. Even if you just left it alone, it wouldn't survive. So please miss me with that dumb argument. I don't believe in abortion. I do believe that an unborn child is a child from the moment of conception because that is the only place that life can start. And until you prove scientifically otherwise to me that life starts somewhere else in the pregnancy, I'm going with that. And I'm going to err on the side of the voiceless for this. But that being said, I also recognize that I live in a blue state where I don't get to make all the decisions that I want to make for my electorate. And it's up to me to persuade and influence. And I don't have the influence right now in my state. I have to accept that. And I do accept it. I don't like it, but I accept it. You accept it too, where you are. And then you work to make the change. That's the American way. But all of these childish freakouts, so I'm going to go tie my tubes, some kind of retribution. Fine, do it. Do whatever you want. Do whatever you want. That's the whole point is that these are decisions that need to be left to the states where you live. That this is just not the purview of the Supreme Court of the United States. And that's all. That's all it is. All right. Tell me what you think. Write to me at JLTY@protonmail.com. JLTY@protonmail.com. Join me over on my locals page. DavisNation.locals.com. DavisNation.locals.com. I'm thinking I'm probably going to close new subscriptions over there for the next few months while I run this race. I just think that, yeah, I don't want it to be too vulnerable over there. I want to protect the people that are already there. So I might close. So get in there now if you're not in there. And yeah, davisnation.locals.com. And what else? Oh, thank you again to the Communicator Awards for our special, very special award. Until we talk again, don't forget, every once in a while, just stop and listen to yourself.
I pray the Lord, my soul today, that we won't stay, then we won't stay. All we got is us, no one can take that away. Yeah. So don't go stay, it's gonna be okay. I pray the Lord, my soul today, that we won't stay, then we won't stay. All we got is us, no one can take that away. Yeah. So don't go stay, it's gonna be okay.
The FCB Radio Network. First-class broadcasting worldwide.